You're listening to Radio Albion.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review, episode number 37. And we are here tonight for the first time ever without Dr. Pat. Well, not the first. Yes, actually, it is the first time ever for Patriotic Weekly Review without the great Dr. Patrick Slattery. It's our first show without him. And I am actually already missing him. A few people have already said that on the on my Twitter feed, said, oh, we miss Patrick. Where's Patrick gone? You know, is he ever coming back? Well, we don't know whether he's coming back or not. We'd obviously like him to, but sadly he isn't here anymore because of a scheduling conflict. However, that does give more time for Jason and more time for our guest, which is a positive. But I am missing Patrick tonight because I did want to speak a little bit about the Trump impeachment. And that was something that Patrick was always very strong on. He was always great on American politics and real politics, such as the Trump impeachment or what was going on in Congress. So we are going to miss his excellent commentary on that. Now, we are going to go around the group. I will start by introducing Jason and we'll see what he's been up to this week. And then we'll get straight over to our excellent guest, Dancing Dove. Jason, what have you been up to this week, my friend?
Well, if you believe it or not, I've been working for White Wellbeing. So something I occasionally do with just about every single living second that I don't have to be earning a living or something of that nature. So yes, or sleeping, which is rarer and rarer. Been a very busy week, a very exciting week. In fact, Jared George and I were on last night on After Hours, and we were talking a bit about, you know, this rally that was held for right of self-defense in Richmond and unpacking that a little bit. And that's something that I think would be worthwhile looking into in the coming week or weeks, discussing that a little bit more. And of course, we have things like Trump and everything else going on in the world right now. That's so exciting. But I also met with Jeff of White Art Collective. And if you don't know Jeff and White Art Collective, please find them. They've been censored off of YouTube altogether. You can find them on DLive, and they have a magnificent show they do over there. Fantastic artists, the best artists in the white positive sphere by far, bar none, and really training up a brand new group of people that are absolutely amazing. And we talked a lot about some very exciting things that we're going to be doing in the future, certainly 2020, and absolutely over this roaring 20s of the new roaring 20s of this decade. Very excited about that. I also want to mention, while I have an opportunity, something else Jeff works on, but this is Tony's baby, which is White People's Quarterly. I am encouraging everyone to reach out to the folks at White People's Quarterly and purchase this magazine. Jared George, Mr. George is in here. A number of other people have written articles, poetry, things and the like. I do not make any money off of these folks. I don't make any money off of Jeff of White Art Collective. We need to be supporting our people, though. There is no support shaming in service to white well-being. And so there is never a time that we cannot reach out with a kind word or a few dollars or whatever it is. We need that currency to be able to feed ourselves, pay our bills, and that sort of thing to get by in order to serve white well-being. So make sure you get this. This is really a magnificent thing. You can see this is the second edition. Both of mine are going into plastic wraps because one of these days they're going to be worth a lot of money. Of course, this Thursday on tap, we have back after technical difficulties, Daughter of Albion. She'll be back again. And this time she's going to be on a proper desktop and there's not going to be any issues. So it'll be Thursday night on tap. Mr. George and I will take her down the path of being tapped into on tap. And we're going to get to all these questions that she has fantastic answers for. Really her sort of a conversion, her going free is what's happening for her. She is indeed going free like many of us, and it is an exciting thing. And speaking of going free, we still have the Kindle version that is available, first 299 downloads at $2.99. And I think for those in the UK, it comes out to $3.99. So this is the most inexpensive way to acquire this book right now. It's the second edition for iteration one, but iteration two will be available shortly. And so you'll be able, if you have the Kindle version, to download the subsequent iterations without an additional cost. And so that is all I have to say, except that I am thrilled, absolutely thrilled, to have Dancing Dove with us. What a gem she is. I got my green shirt on. I don't know how it's coming across on the camera, but I got a green shirt on just for Dancing Dove. And it is so exciting to have her back in the White Positive sphere. This woman, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, not only is she just amazing, gives amazing insight when she has made her videos over the years, but she's also an animal lover like myself, takes care of many birds, and you'll probably hear some of their beautiful songs, their voices in the background today as we are chatting. I hope you do. I will pass it back to our great leader, Mark Collette.
Okay, well, just a couple of small items before we introduce Carol, aka Dancing Dove. The first issue is today I send out a mass email for Patriotic Alternative. So if you have signed up to Patriotic Alternative, please check your email box. You should have an update from me. Now, some people, specifically people with Yahoo email addresses, the email always goes into a spam folder. And it goes into a spam folder that's only accessible via a desktop computer. So there's a second spam folder. Yahoo email addresses have two. One's accessible via mobile phones. One is only accessible via desktop computers. And that's where the Patriotic Alternative emails tend to end up. So there has been an email sent out today. Now, if you haven't got one, because I get people write to me saying, oh, I signed up ages ago, haven't got an email from you. A small number of people inputted their email addresses wrong, so I do get some bounce back, so maybe that's you. If you haven't got the email and you have registered or there's any problem, anyone can email me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com at any time. Now, finally, before we get to our guest, if you want to make a donation, if you want to financially assist us, and I'm laughing because we're going somewhere with this, you can use Entropy. Now, the link is on my Telegram. The link is on my Twitter. It's in the chat now. It's beneath the show in the description. So if you want to make a financial contribution, please use Entropy. If you can't use Entropy, you can write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com, and you can also donate via Bitcoin at any time. And Entropy is the best way to ask questions. If you send us a financial contribution, we will read out your statement live. And questions that are asked through Entropy, we usually ask the top 5, 6, 7 questions from the questions asked through Entropy. And questions are voted on through Entropy. So only the best questions, the ones that you want answered, get answered. Now, last week, somebody made a very generous donation of $2,020, which was really, really great, until the person in question wrote to me and informed me that he meant to donate $20.20. Now, Entropy doesn't, unfortunately, allow you to give fractions of a dollar. It doesn't allow you to give cents. It doesn't allow you to give pennies. You have to give whole dollars or whole pounds. And because of this, we obviously promptly refunded this gentleman because it was an accident. So I wanted to make that very clear, because obviously there's a huge push in this movement for transparency with things like donations. And people see how much, I make every week on PWR, and obviously a donation of that size does get people talking, but I just want to make it very clear that donation was withdrawn, it was made in error, and it has been fully refunded. So I hope that puts the whole issue to bed. And if you are making a donation tonight, it will be gratefully accepted, but please stick to whole denominations, because if you try to use cents or pennies, you could end up donating a lot more than you hope to, and then you'll have to be on the phone to the wonderful Entropy team, which is actually a pleasure. I love dealing with the Entropy team, but you probably will have your sort of heart beating a little faster if you have to speak to them over an accidental donation that was $2,000 over what you were hoping to donate. So without further ado, I want to introduce our excellent special guest. Now, Dancing Dove's been on before. She was on the old show, and she gave some great commentary, and I love having her on. She's somebody who's got a wonderful demeanor. She obviously presents herself extremely well. She's a lovely-looking woman. She gives great commentary. But she appeared on her 100th episode when the show was Tutar, and a lot of people appeared on that particular show. People who are very, very well known, people who've got huge audiences, people who have traveled the world, who have written best-selling books. We had obviously Dr. David Duke, we had Lana and Henrik, we had Jared Taylor, we had Richard Spencer, we had Greg Johnson, we had Millennial Woes. Everyone was on that show. But out of everyone that appeared on episode 100, nobody left an impression on me quite as much as Carol did. Because midway through her appearance, one of the birds that she cares for just swooped in and landed on her head and started sort of chirping away. And you can't script something like that. It was such an amazing night. And out of all of the guests, Carol was an absolute high point and gave me a memory that I will never forget. That was a wonderful, wonderful moment. And I've been really looking forward to having her on again. We wanted her on just before Christmas, but she went away. So this has been the earliest possible opportunity. So without further ado, Carol, please tell us a bit about yourself. Tell us what you've been up to. Tell us how we can contribute to your work. And, you know, if you've got any birds flying around, you know, feel free to let them peck at your head.
Okay, so yes, they might actually. The one who flew onto my head, I hope you can hear me okay, can you? There's not too much bird noise in the background. The one who flew onto me is the little dove. She's locked up this evening. So, because sometimes she gets very emotional and she wants attention and just jumps on top of people's heads. So she won't have the chance to do that this evening. But the other dove is flying around at the moment, as you might be able to hear, so he might make an appearance. So what I've been up to, well, I've had a very inactive YouTube year last year, and that's just because I was so busy with work and studying as well. It's been taking up a lot of my time, but now I'm starting to get back to things now.
Let me ask you really quickly, Carol, are you going to go back to doing those? Because I loved these pieces that you used to do where you would read a story and then you would give your thoughts as you went through the story. Are you going to go back to doing that again?
Like a news story or a fiction story?
Well, no, it was news stories. I did like the fiction stories as well. Those were magnificent as well. Please do more of those. But the news stories, because I really thought when you are on camera, you have such a magical energy, and when you're reading these stories and then you're having these responses, especially when there were a couple times when you sort of the shock on your face at what they were saying, it was hilarious. So it was just like you were lovely and sensuous and funny. And so are you going to be doing more of those? I hope so.
Yeah, definitely. I know I do a lot of different things on my channel, but I plan to continue with all of the different aspects, even though they're very different. But yeah, definitely, I think the news stories, because usually I choose a lot of news stories that are quite small, that didn't get a lot of media coverage, or maybe none at all. And so I like to kind of give those a bit of attention. And sometimes I just get so exasperated by what I'm reading. You know yourself, but the crazy things that we read about that are happening today just seem so ridiculous that you just can't help but be horrified by it all.
I wish I could remember right now. I'd probably come back during the show and I'll remind you and the audience, and maybe they can go back and find the particular video. But there was something that, it'll come back to me. I laughed so hard, ladies and gentlemen. So you're going to have such a treat when Carol starts making videos again. What sort of frequency do you plan on, or are you shooting for when it comes to these videos? Are you looking to make two a month or something like this, or more?
I'd be hoping for one a week. That's of everyone. So like not the news one a week, but like maybe one a week. News one week, then a narration the next week, then an Irish lesson the next week, until around March. And then I think after March, I'm going to have a bit more time. So hopefully be getting back to more frequent, because I used to do them really frequently I used to upload like almost every day around the beginning of 2018 when I had more time back in the day.
Oh, yeah, that was very enjoyable. Now, you'll have an opportunity again at the end of the show to tell folks where they can find you and what to look forward to. But if you could, for the people who are with us just here at the beginning of the show, could you tell them where exactly to find you and where you might be showing up? She'll definitely be showing up over on Tap as well, ladies and gentlemen. So you'll be seeing her here and over on Tap, and who knows where else you'll end up finding her. But where can folks find you?
On YouTube, Dancing Dove. I do also have a BitChute channel, but just with the lack of time, that's been kind of abandoned for the last while. But I do want to get back to it because I really appreciate BitChute and what they're doing and the way they're not so difficult to deal with like YouTube is these days. And also on Twitter, The Dancing Dove.
Oh, that's magnificent. And then one final question to get started here, and then we'll pass it back over to our leader. And that is, I know there are at least a handful of people of the great many that are watching right now, and those who will be watching this in replay over on Mark. Ladies and gentlemen, remember that these videos come down. I still receive questions from time to time about, where did Mark's video go? Why did Mark delete it? What happened? Did YouTube take it down? No, after these are posted, we take them down so that we avoid some of the censorship. And then they go up on Mark's BitChute channel, and I will post it, and the mods will post it over the course of the show. Just make sure you look out for that, by the way. And what exactly, I guess I'll go ahead and I'll pass it back. Well, we'll just ask this and then we'll pass it to Mark. So there's certainly a handful of people that must be wondering right now, even though you don't hear them now because she has silenced the microphone. But what is the bird or birds, or what are the birds that are the ones that are truly singing in the background now, these lovely songs that you get to hear?
So the high-pitched, beautiful song is the canary, the male canary. Oh. And he'll be singing more and more now that we're coming into spring. The lengthening days have an effect on their systems. That's how they know it's spring, just the length of the day. And so they start to get ready to have babies, although they don't have babies because... Well, I don't want to breed canaries, but also Mrs. Canaries, she's really stupid and she can't lay eggs properly. I know it sounds weird, but she lays her eggs from a height, and then when they fall, they smash. So,
oh. You know,
yeah, okay. But it's easier that way. And then the more woo-hoo noise is the dove, the collared dove. And then the kind of grumbling noise, like rrr, in the background, is the pigeon.
Ah, okay. And the collared dove is the one with that landed on your head, yes? The collared dove, yeah. That was the one who landed on your head? Yes, little dove. Yeah. Love hearing you say that. Well, you're welcome.
And they also do the screeches as well. So if you hear someone going, that's a dove kind of getting a bit angry.
Well, that's hilarious. Mark, please take it away, brother.
Well, I'm actually pleased we've got a real animal lover here tonight with us, because one of the things I wanted to talk about, it's been big news all day today, was the climate change discussion that's been taking place in Davos. Obviously, we've had the annoying sprout-faced Greta Thunberg telling us all about climate change and how we're all about to die. And Dancing Dove has turned up with her own little Greta Thunberg-style, what are they, braids? Pigtails? Braids? I'm not up on the names of female hair naming conventions. Oh my God. I suppose I'm going to have to be though, aren't I? Now I've got a daughter. I suppose I'm going to have to know the difference between a ponytail, a pigtail, braids, and all other manner of hair stylings. But yeah, I've been sort of looking at this, and I've noticed yet again that Greta Thunberg is being wheeled out. And obviously, Donald Trump has sort of been painted as a little bit of the Antichrist because he called the climate change agenda that she was pushing in Davos as alarmist and saying, you know, the world isn't really going to end. But again, and we've spoken about this in the past, and I really want to throw this out to both of you guys, but especially to Carol from the position of her love for animals. I am a huge environmentalist, and that isn't just limited to kind of some sort of faux environmentalism. You see a lot of these people, the Tommy Tards in particular, they're desperate to stop halal slaughter. But if you talk to them about kosher slaughter, they look at you blankly and are like, well, what? Why would you want to stop that? Well, because it's exactly the same as halal slaughter. And if you genuinely do care about, slaughter methods, you'd stop all ritual slaughter. You would make, you'd ensure that only stunned slaughter took place in your country. Unstunned slaughter should be absolutely outlawed, regardless of which religion is practicing it. But obviously, certain people only talk about halal slaughter for a reason. Now, but I take things a little bit further than that, because it's not just a matter of sort of halal and kosher slaughter that's blighting the animal population here in the UK. Here in the UK, we have a particular breed of hedgehog, and these hedgehogs were everywhere at one point. Hedgehogs, you just find them everywhere. I mean, we used to get them when I was a child. We used to get hedgehogs in our garden. If I used to go on an evening walk, you'd see hedgehogs scrabbling about places, trying to climb over things. And if you ever approach a hedgehog, it rolls up into a little ball and it makes like this angry growling sound. I'm sure it thinks it's growling, but it sounds like sort of snoring. There's this little pulsating ball snoring. But these hedgehogs are now an endangered species here in Britain. In one of the shopping centres we frequent, if we're going to town on a weekend, there's a stall about hedgehogs, about the fact that these hedgehogs are now becoming rarer and rarer, and they're, endangered. And so many of them have been killed, and they're mainly killed either when new housing developments go up or on the roads. You see a lot of squashed hedgehogs at a certain time of the year when they come out of hibernation and they start stumbling about. People don't really pay attention to what's in front of them on the road, and they get squashed. And I'm sure there's many other species of birds, mammals, insects, lizards. There was a newt that was very common in Britain, and now again that's on the the list of species that is being slowly forced to extinction. And this isn't because the weather's got warmer. This isn't because things have got a couple of degrees hotter, as Greta Thunberg claims. This is because there's too many people in Britain. This is because our population is skyrocketing. This is because some years enough people have come to Britain for us to require an entire city the size of Manchester, or one year in particular, enough people came to the country to almost need to build another city the size of Birmingham, which is our second largest city. And this puts a huge strain on the nation, and it leads to massive new house building projects. It leads to people having to do these long commutes, new roads being built, and it destroys natural habitats and forces animals like our hedgehog closer to extinction. But again, when you look at the speeches made in Davos, one of them by Greta Thunberg and one of them by Trump, neither of those people addressed the real problem. And the real problem isn't climate change. And Greta Thunberg wants to push climate change from a leftist perspective. And Donald Trump wants to say, well, climate change isn't happening because he wants unfettered economic growth. And where does unfettered economic growth lead us? Well, unfettered economic growth leads to a place where every last tree's been cut down, every last meadow's been concreted over, and all the green spaces are covered under a grey urban sprawl. Because unfettered economic growth means importing more and more and more economic units into your country to grow the GDP, which is exactly what Trump's doing. He hasn't stopped immigration. Immigration has actually continued unabated, and in some cases, especially with H-1B and H-2B visas, they've actually increased under Trump, and they're things that he said he was going to get a grip of. But all of these things lead to animals going extinct, the destruction of our natural habitats, flora, fauna. And I always look at these events, and I look at people who are supposedly Greens, people who are supposedly on the side of environmentalism, and they are never talking about pollution. They're never talking about plastic waste. They're never talking about housing. They're never talking about rising population due to immigration. And those are the things that are destroying the natural habitats in the Western world. Now, obviously, Carol, you're somebody who's really into conservationism. You're really into animal welfare. You look after these birds. What's your thoughts on what's been going on in Davos? And what's your thoughts on climate change? Do you think it's all a scam? And what do you think the real threats are to our environment and to numerous species all over the world, both in the West and on a global scale?
Well, first of all, sorry, the birds are making noise again. I'll just move a little closer to the microphone. So first of all, I'm going to be honest, I haven't looked, you know, the way there's like, there's two sides, like climate change is all man-made and climate change is not at all man-made. It's just a natural cycle of the earth. I've been meaning to look at the arguments for and against for about 2 or 3 years now, and I never got around to it. But I think it doesn't, to me, it doesn't matter that much. As in, there are a lot of things that we are doing wrong and that we could improve. But I would suspect, without having looked at all the arguments, I think it seems more reasonable, the idea of the magnetic poles shifting. The way that they, sorry, I'm not very good at explaining it, the way that they flip every couple of 100,000 years, I think, and we're in a period of change right now, and the magnetic field of the Earth is what protects us so much from the cosmic rays in the universe, and so obviously this has a knock-on effect then with clouds and weather. That's one of the ideas. Without being an expert on all of that, that just sounds like it kind of makes more sense to me. That said, there are so many things that humans are doing wrong all over the world. One thing I just never really understand with the people who complain about the climate change is this thing of overpopulation. And, you know, I mean, we all know, we've all been exasperated about it and saying the same thing again and again, but it's the Westerners are not the people. We're the only ones being told to stop having babies and reduce the population, but really it's all of the others who are increasing at such a frightening rate. And when you look at people like Greta, who I presume would want to let everyone in the third world into Europe and to take on our way of life, and even just like moving from a warmer place to a colder place, which is obviously going to necessitate more burning of fuels or fossil fuels, then it's, I just don't understand the thinking. What's the end plan for these people who say this kind of thing? Like, what do they envision in the future? How is it going to work out? Do they ever take it step by step and think of what will happen in the end? I think the thing is with Western people, a lot of people really care and are really conscious of their impact on the environment. Of course, there are people who don't care at all. But when you see how recycling takes off, all of the effort that people put in, the whole no waste movement and all of the interest in that, there is a lot of interest and a want to live very sustainably. And it's something that you just don't really see in other countries. And I'm not saying that they're all exactly the same, but like, for example, well, that video that's been going around on Twitter or YouTube of the, I think Ecuador, the big truck dumping the whole truck full of garbage and rubbish and plastic into this river, this small little river. And I don't know if that's like just a one-off and that's why they were filming it, or if it's pretty routine over there. But just from my own experiences in other countries like India, people just don't really care about plastic and plastic rubbish and waste. And they laugh at you when you do care. Mm-hmm. I was on a train once, and it was a really long train ride it was like 56 hours or something. And I, you know, they have people, food vendors and tea vendors, who go through the train selling stuff and snacks. So over like 2.5 days, I was buying bits and pieces, and there were no bins on the train. Mm-hmm. And so I was just keeping all of the like little plastic cups and bits of plastic and paper. And I had it all kind of scrunched up in this little neat little ball. And I was planning to, you know, when I got off the train, put it in the bin. And this woman sitting across from me, she would like gestured for me to give it to her. And I was like, without really thinking, because your mind gets a bit soft when you've been on a train for 56 hours. Uh-huh. Without really thinking, I just handed her the plastic ball of rubbish. And she just threw it out the window.
Oh, God.
I was like, oh, my God, I was saving that for 2.5 days. And I jumped up and I tried to stop her. I was like, no, what are you doing? And she just started laughing at me. And she thought it was so funny. And you know, we were passing through a really beautiful nature area. Wasn't much plastic, but, you know, they don't need that much more. And another time I saw I can't remember what town it was in, but it was a town that's on a big river. And I was sitting in this nice restaurant near the river, lovely atmosphere, lovely people. And this man just walks over with a big plastic bag full of rubbish in full sight of everyone and just tips the whole thing into the river.
Oh.
And nobody cared. Nobody batted an eyelid. So there's such different attitudes to rubbish and sustainability and pollution in different parts of the world. And of course, I'm not saying that everyone in India is like that. I'm sure there are people who are totally exasperated and who are working to save the natural environment there as well. But just, you know, you couldn't do that here in Europe. If one person was crazy enough to go over with a big bag and try and dump it in the river, I'm sure there'd be somebody would be at the very least filming and putting it on the internet to shame them.
Uh-huh.
And let me see, other problems. Well, obviously there's, you know, as Mark was saying, the extinction problem, all of the building, that really concerns me as well. When you see all of these new houses and housing estates just popping up, and you know, it's even just in my lifetime the difference that I've seen in Ireland. A couple of weeks ago I was back in places that I hadn't been in years, and they were fields that I used to like play in as a child and used to go walking, and now they're all just housing estates. It's really sad to see it. And to think of the impact that it's having on the environment, a place full of trees and natural grass and fields that would have been home to so many birds and newts and frogs and insects and all the diversity of our nature is just houses and tiny little gardens. Yeah, so I think those are the things that concern me the most.
Do you have anything to add to that, Jason?
Sure. This is a really big topic, and you said some great things, Carol, that really drive home the point of what's happening to our world as a result of this anti-whiteism. There is one. I'll just start off with something really positive, and that is that this is, in many ways, we've been talking about this for quite a little while now, that there are a lot of white people out there who participate in one way or one form or another with anti-whiteism. And they're kind of coping with their envy and their jealousy of Western kind as a whole, and the avatar of Western kind being any white person they see, no matter what job he or she does or what kind of state they live in. In fact, I heard of from a person within the white positive sphere that a man said, well, the people who are starving or hungry, emaciated, etc., or sick, obese in Appalachia, they shouldn't be cared for because they're white. So these sorts of things are causing a lot of white people to leave anti-whiteism. Now, if they leave and they become paralyzed, that's just as good as them in their decision-making and what they're going to participate with. That's just as good as them coming to us. But I think a great many are going to come to us. And one group that is going to come to us, and this is something that we need to talk about more, and that is the care and welfare of all of our flora and fauna. White people have demonstrated, Westmen have demonstrated, that we have a love and a connection and a reciprocal harmony with our natural environment that we just have not seen. And of course, this may or may not be true for the YouTube censors, but that we just have not seen elsewhere in the world. And many other groups of people, in fact, they think it's ridiculous, it's ludicrous, that we would endow an animal or the natural environment with a sort of a spiritual quality that we as human beings possess, which of course it makes no surprise. It's no surprise when you see how they treat each other. No need for law and order, no need for any sort of justice as we define it, at least. They might define it differently. But there are a great many white people who care about our environments, who care about the hedgehog going extinct, who care about, you know, this is a big difference between somebody who is actually doing something, which is dancing dove, taking care of birds, rehabbing injured animals. You can hear these animals in the background. She's living this life. And somebody like an abused, mentally ill child like Greta, who is plastic and plastic in so many ways. And that is the representation of that which is supposed to be advocating for the health of the planet. It's absurd. We here in service to white well-being, we here in the white positive sphere are the people who actually care about the environment. We would like to see, and it may well be, we've talked about this before, that an appraisal of the human animal, of who and what we are as people, will conclude, an accurate appraisal will conclude, that we need to live only so many people per square mile or per square kilometer, so that the things that we have looked to in the past, these grand cities, these overpopulated megalopolis every so many miles, is something that is detrimental to the earth, is detrimental to our biospirits as well. And so it'll be something that we will have to alter in the future. So cities of today, when we recapture our destiny, might be something of the past. They might be things we pull down and we spread out and live more in harmony with our environment and more in a way that preserves the hedgehog, preserves the animals that are threatened, and in fact, not only preserves them, but enhances them, enhances that environment, and thereby enhances our biospirit. If you have not lived in the country before, like I had the opportunity to live with a very wealthy man, and you can read about that in Born Guilty, and lived out in a beautiful area called the Plains, Virginia, you have no idea what it does to your spirit and soul. I had lived in cities and suburbs, and there's something innervating there. There's something vacuous there. There's something that deprives and eviscerates you there. And when you go out into the country, when you live in harmony with our natural environment, there's something that speaks directly to our biospirit. So there are a lot of things here that are going to drive folks, white folks with normal sensibilities, the vagues out there that are our brothers and sisters, who love the environment. They want to protect animals. They hate seeing animals in pain. They hate seeing the environment polluted and corrupted. And they are formally in the camp of anti-whiteism under various stripes, under various names. But they're seeing, in fact, that these claims for protection of the earth, protection of the environment, protection of animals were just pretexts, because there's no denying it anymore. When you take something like a country like the UK or the United States or what have you, and you take people from a third world country where they could only produce so many of their own kind because they died off from childhood, infant mortality. They didn't have electricity to use, or very little electricity to use. They didn't have cars, or very few cars. They didn't have the ability to purchase widget after widget after widget that needs to be produced in giant factories belching black clouds of poison into our atmosphere. They didn't need all of that. They didn't have access to all of that. And they moved them then from those environments to places like Western civilization, the UK, the United States, Spain, elsewhere. They move them to these environments. And then what happens? They then have several cars. They then have houses built for them, as Dancing Dove is talking to us. The houses being built all had to have factories producing the materials that would go into the construction of the home, belching out more pollution, more production of these things that are harming the environment, more paints, more glues, more solvents, more of all of these types of things. They're then driving cars that have to be produced in auto factories, belching out poisons, cars that in places like the UK and in the US, where there are very strict regulations to the production of such things, in order, because we want these things, we want to protect our environment, but not all of those cars that are on our roads in our countries are being built in our countries. No, they're being built elsewhere where there aren't as many restrictions. They're being built elsewhere where, in fact, you are allowed to do things like back a trash truck up and just dump everything into the ocean, back a truck up full of chemicals and just dump that into the river, where they're allowed to do these things. Absolutely poisoning the planet. What happens to the carbon footprint that the anti-whites want to talk about all the time? And it is indeed the carbon footprint when they talk about anthropogenic global warming, man-made or man-influenced global warming. That is what they're talking about, because they want to be able to tax that. They create this. This is the reverse, a global problem, and therefore a global remedy, a global tax, and the instantiation of their power. It is not a carbon footprint, but even if it was a carbon footprint, they are massively increasing the carbon footprint by moving millions upon millions upon millions of people from these countries where they have very tiny carbon footprints, simply because they don't have access and the ability to get these things. Then they move them to the West. They fleece us. They rape us of our tax dollars to give to these people in various forms. And folks, don't just look at the actual welfare programs and how much money comes from those programs. That in itself will dizzy you and inebriate you when you look at those numbers. But that's not it. They receive much more money. They business loans and grants, more importantly, the grants. Breaks on and forgiveness on taxation so that they don't have to pay. Big surprise that they're able to compete so well against the native business owners, okay? And then, of course, they receive money as well through things like these charities. The government shunts so much money, billions of dollars into all of these different sorts of charities that they themselves then, under different names, then distribute this money again to these groups of people. They then use these dollars to buy houses, to drive up the cost of houses, to cause the creation of houses, to buy automobiles, to drive up the price of automobiles, to cause the creation of automobiles. Every single part in the automobile is made somewhere by man in a factory somewhere that is producing, pulling more minerals out of the earth, producing more pollutants for our planet. And not only that, but we're looking at these other countries like China, countries like India, where you don't have these anti-white global elites who are saying, no, we're not going to buy a single thing from you because you're absolutely poisoning the planet. So until this all ends, nothing more for you. Your country can starve. That's not happening, in fact. What's happening is our businesses are being chased from our native countries over to these countries because they can do business at not even just a fraction, at nothing compared to the cost, even though they have to ship it across the Pacific Ocean or the Atlantic Ocean or around Africa. It's still cheaper than doing business in our countries, radically increasing the pollution we see. So all of these white folks, just to sum up, all of these white people out there with normal sensibilities, that they either set themselves in an environmentalist camp, or they set themselves in one of these different camps, they all nonetheless, they hate to see the suffering of animals. They hate to see the pollution of the planet. They look out into the world and they say, what party or what group, what ideology can we support? What pathology when it comes to anti-whiteism can we support? And they're looking at these and concluding, none of this is working. None of this is getting better. The earth is getting worse, and they're going to be looking elsewhere. They're going to be looking to people like us who actually care about the environment, who actually care about animals. And then the final thing I will say is that this whole idea of anthropogenic global warming, all of the science shows that without question, the one thing they cite all the time when it comes to this anthropogenic global warming is a cartoonist who accumulated several hundred scientist names. A cartoonist, a newspaper cartoonist, who accumulated several hundred names of scientists with studies they had done and said they all say that anthropogenic global warming is because of X, Y, and Z. Those people have been interviewed in that the scientists' names, a great many of whom said they were never contacted. And in fact, their research says the exact opposite of what this cartoonist says. And in fact, we can track, the scientists who look at this can actually track that the temperature of the Earth is influenced by the solar radiation, these sorts of sunspots and et cetera, that the sun is putting out, certainly our ability to protect the planet. Many people don't understand the geomagnetism and how we have this field around the Earth by way of the magnetosphere. And if it were not here, and this is the reason why you can't terraform Mars, it doesn't have one. The solar wind radiation, the solar wind blows away your atmosphere and everything is cooked by the sun. Temperature goes through the roof. Just look at the other planets that don't have this. And this is why you can't have an atmosphere as a consequence. And finally, I just want to mention, because I did mention the carbon footprint and how the anti-whites always want to talk about the carbon footprint. There have been periods in the Earth's history where they can look into the sediments of the planet and in ice samples and the like, and they can find periods where the amount of carbon in the atmosphere was infinitely higher than it is today. And what did the Earth look like when it was infinitely higher? The plants were infinitely more diverse. The leaves on the plants were infinitely larger. What do they do in greenhouses to get the plants to grow faster, to get them to be more vigorous, to get them to be healthier? They pump in carbon dioxide. Plants breathe it. And then in return for us, they produce oxygen. So the problem is not anthropogenic global warming by way of the creation of carbon. If there is any problem, and it's what we actually care about, it's the pollution of the planet by the creation of all of these needs of billions of people now that have needs for more and more. And more of these anti-whites say, well, they deserve more and more. They deserve to have everything that you have, no matter how long you have worked for it in the West, no matter how much your family has worked for it, no matter how many decades and centuries of a family line has come together to put you in a place where you can have a cell phone and an average car and be able to drive and have paved roads and things like that. No, people who have gone a millennia of generations in their countries and have nothing to show for it, they automatically just deserve what you have. And what does that do to the planet? Well, it absolutely sullies it. And I pass it back to Mark.
Thank you. There's only one thing I want to comment further on this particular issue. It's something that Carol brought up, this sort of truck dumping all this garbage into the river. And I saw this and it absolutely disgusted me. Now, there's a couple of things here. Firstly, I'm sure somebody told the driver to do that. I'm sure that's the policy of some company. And I'm also sure that the driver did it willingly. No one put a gun to his head to get him to do it. And there's something really wrong there, isn't there? Because if somebody asked me, you know, when we were kids, you know, my mum always used to instill in us that we were to hold on to our rubbish. She'd either take it off us and put it in, you know, in a little bag, which then we'd put in the bin, or we'd be told to sort of fold it up and we'd put it in our pockets. And then we'd empty our pockets when we get home and put it, you know, and she'd take it to the bin. And that was something that was instilled in all children. And I think it's something that's largely an indicator of developed countries and people with a much higher IQ, because people with high IQs can defer pleasure and leave things for longer because they realize that holding on to something or not doing something immediately can have a long-term gain. It's like the marshmallow test with children. You know, you give your child one marshmallow and say, here's a marshmallow. You can either eat the marshmallow or I can take it away and in an hour you'll get two. And obviously intelligent children realize that waiting an hour for two marshmallows is much better than just scoffing one now. And it's being able to defer pleasure, which is the mark of high IQ people. And when you look at certain countries, you can really tally up low IQ nations with the amount of dumping, with the amount of abuse, with the destruction of the environment, the destruction of endangered species, with people just throwing things on the floor. And it's something that really gets to me. I mean, I hate going past an area of natural beauty and seeing things just thrown out of the window of cars. And if I see people doing that, I do actually challenge them. You know, I'm one of those embarrassing people that if you're out and about with, I will just pull up random strangers on their rubbishy behavior. And I'm kind of fearless in that way because I don't really mind getting myself into sort of any hassle or trouble doing so. I do. So what have you done that for? Pick that up. Or and I really think that, again, it was a mark of our society. We used to have shame, didn't we? We used to shame people that did the wrong thing. Now we shame people that do the right thing. So we used to shame people who, you know, were scruffy, obese, smelly, who slept around, who threw their garbage out of the car window. You know, now we shame people who are proud of their nation, who try to stop, you know, English girls being abused by foreigners. You know, shame has now been turned on its head and is used against good people rather than used against bad people. But we do need to bring that shame back. But I think if Greta Thunberg and Donald Trump, because my opinion of him really at the moment couldn't be much lower than it actually is, if both of those people actually cared in any way about the environment, and that's quite interesting. I probably think that Greta Thunberg actually cares more about the environment than Donald Trump. I don't think anything about him is he's not an environmentalist at all. If I'm wrong on that, you know, somebody please send me something that disproves that. But I think he'd be the kind of guy that would chop down every last forest if he could assure the American people that their GDP would creep that ever slightly, you know, tiny little bit higher. So as I say, I think that environmentalism is the mark of a high IQ, high trust society, which is what we were. And that's also sort of shown in our farming methods. We never let anything go to waste. And we always used methods of crop rotation to ensure that we got the best out of the land and that we didn't have to degrade the land and we didn't ruin anything. Everything was done with an eye to long-term goals and sustainability. But unfortunately, long-term goals and sustainability are thrown out of the window when you are living in this hedonistic, materialistic, capitalistic system that only cares about immediate profits and hitting GDP targets. Now, I want to sort of move forward a little bit here.
Sorry, just before you move on.
Oh, yeah, sure.
It's just before you move on, I want to ask you a question. How do people react when you call them out for throwing rubbish?
Sorry, I was just typing a response to somebody. Somebody's told me I'm wrong about Trump, so I wanted to actually know why I'm wrong about Trump and his environmentalism, but I may be wrong. If I'm wrong, I'll apologise. People generally are quite shocked. If you are honest with people, they're taken aback. They don't really know what to say. And most people won't actually give you abuse. Most people who do things like that are actually quite cowardly. And when they're pulled up on it, because they know they're doing something wrong, because they've been shamed, they do look, you know, like a like rabbits caught in the headlights. They, you know, they're shocked that anyone would say that, because people are so used today to being able to behave in an absolutely abhorrent manner and no one pulls them up. So generally people do fall in line. And I think, again, that is a mark of people who are high IQ people. And it's also a mark in a way of people who have had discipline and order taken off them. People in Western nations, they actually react very well to discipline and order. They react very well to people who actually tell them what to do. They like structure. They like rules. They like a structured life, which does have meaning in it. I mean, I'll give you an example of this. When I was at school, I remember I had two teachers. We had two, when we were at A levels, we had two teachers for each subject. So we had two biology teachers, we had two economics teachers, we had two geography, and so on. You know, you were taught by two different teachers. And I remember in one subject in particular, I had one teacher and I couldn't stand him. He was so strict and he was so abusive and he would always hammer you over anything. If your homework was late, you were hammered. If you didn't perform well on the test, you were hammered. If you act like a jackass, you were hammered. And I remember once he told everyone that the spaces in for questions, the spaces for answers on any examination paper were a certain size because they were calculated for the number of words you would need to write to give a correct answer. And I, being sort of a bit of a sarcastic know-it-all at times, I decided it'd be funny to make my words really big and write really big. So I filled the space to see what he would say, you know, to push back a little bit against his order. And he went berserk and he told the whole class, he said, and writing in really big words does not equal filling the space as it's meant to be filled, and told everyone he was talking about me. And at the time, I was furious and I couldn't stand this guy. I thought he was horrible, worst teacher ever. Then we had another teacher who taught the same subject, and he let us get away with murder. He would always accept any excuse for your homework being late. He would let you write however you wanted. He wasn't really bothered if you did badly on tests. He was always very sympathetic with any excuse you would offer him. And he was great because you had real fun with that guy. And that was my initial impression. However, after 2 years of being taught by these two teachers, Mr. Nice Guy, who let you get away with murder, and the drill instructor who made the guy at a Full Metal Jacket look like a pushover, by the end of 2 years of being taught by these two guys, my opinions had reversed. I absolutely loved the teacher who had beat me into shape because he had turned me into the perfect student. And there wasn't a single question I couldn't answer. I wrote everything as I should have done. My handwriting filled the space as it was meant to be. I knew how many words I needed for every answer. And when I went into exams for his part of the syllabus, there was no fear. No exam could have foxed me. However, the other teacher, who would let me get away with murder and let the class run riot, when we went into his exams, there was that uncertainty, there was that fear, because you weren't properly prepared. And I think that follows through with many things. In today's world, there's this idea that if you're harsh to people, if there's structure, if there's rules, if you're disciplined or if you discipline people, it's all mean, it's all horrible, it hurts people's feelings. You have to be nice, you have to treat people with kid gloves. But that doesn't build good, rounded, well-educated people. In fact, it lets people go off the rails. And I think discipline, order, and structure is something that we Europeans crave. And as discipline, order, and structure has been removed from every aspect of our lives, our society has collapsed. And when I say every aspect, I mean every aspect. It's been taken out of schools. It's been taken out of, look at the cinema. When I used to go to the cinema as a kid, you would have real rules. If you messed around in the cinema, you'd be thrown out. They had ushers who would walk around with a torch and shine it on you and tell you to be quiet. One of the last times I went to the cinema, there was a gang of kids just chatting away, playing with their phones, ruining the film for everyone. And the rest of the cinema, or the rest of the people in the cinema, just didn't do anything about it because, oh, you can't discipline everyone. It's wrong to tell somebody else's kids to shut up. Well, why is it? It would have made it better for everyone else watching the film if somebody had turned around and just said, can you shut up? We've all paid to see this. We don't want to hear your stupid commentary. You trying to show off to your girlfriend. She's not laughing with you, mate. She's laughing at you because you're a clown. Now shut it and let us enjoy the film. That would have been better for everyone. But no one says those things because everyone wants to be the nice teacher. Everyone wants to be liked. So it's anything goes. And what does anything go lead to? It leads to a society that falls to pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I'd say like nowadays, there's a lot of people who really wanted to say something, but they're probably just afraid of being stabbed. you know, I know it's not a joke. It's really awful, but you know, it's, when you hear of the reasons that people were stabbed for, when they confront someone over something so small, or refusing someone a cigarette, something so ridiculous gets blown up into like a murder. It just happens so much. But then that's the end result of all this letting it go, being nice and, you know, not saying anything. And the worst people then have the most power. Mm-hmm.
I agree. Now, there was something I wanted to talk about tonight, but we're halfway through the show, so we can do some super chats. And there are some super chats on these issues. I wanted to talk a little bit about Brexit, because Brexit happens not this Friday, but next Friday. So next Friday, I'm going to do a special stream, whether Brexit happens or not. And on that stream, I've invited Morgoth. I've invited Laura Towler. It would be great to have other people. Maybe Nick Laurie. Nick, if you're watching, you've been a great voice and people seem to really like you. So you're welcome to pop on the stream. I know you've emailed me and I've got to email you back, but you emailed the wrong email address, so I always forget about that one. But it would be wonderful to have a January the 31st Brexit stream and to keep it all to people who are British, who would benefit from it, know what it's all about, and discuss that issue. And specifically, when we have the Brexit stream, I want to talk not just about the positives of pushing Brexit through, but also the negatives. And I'm not going to go into a big rant on this now, but what I mean about the negatives of Brexit is that there seems to be this absolute slavish faith now in the Conservative Party. And as nationalists, we know what the Conservative Party are really all about. We know that the Conservative Party aren't about doing what's best for us. They are very much globalist. They are very much pro-immigration. But if you see some of these pro-Brexit groups and you look at their regular propaganda output, now it's all praising Boris Johnson, praising the Conservative Party establishment. And that is something that could be very bad for nationalism and patriotism, because many of these nationalists and patriots are now thinking the battle's won because Brexit's done, Boris Johnson's in charge, and apparently immigration's coming to a halt. And without being negative, Brexit isn't done because we haven't seen the small print of the deal. Mm-hmm. Britain isn't saved, and immigration isn't under control. In fact, Boris has already said he wants an uncapped immigration system. So I think this is very important to talk about, but we won't be talking about it tonight. What we'll be doing is focusing this evening on other issues, and we'll focus specifically on Brexit next Friday for a Brexit special stream. So we're going to do some questions. We've had 3 donations on Entropy. There's still time to donate if you want and ask a question. I've just left the link in the chat now. First, we have a $3 donation from Vikings Cog. Thank you very much. He asked, do you think it's possible to make third worlders become environmentalists, or are they simply too inept or too poor to care? To fulfill Greta's vision, wouldn't the West have to force them not to pollute? I'm going to throw that over to Carol first.
So, sorry, what was the last bit? To fulfill Greta's vision?
Would we have to force the third world not to pollute? It wouldn't be a matter of just saying to these people, here's some rules, follow them. It would be something we'd have to literally follow through with force, and actually make them do it.
We would, I think that would have to happen. I don't think it's good. Like, I think just like some people are just fundamentally different. Some people just have no interest in that as a group. Again, I'm sure there are people within these groups who have a huge interest. But in general, I think it would have to be forced. But then I'm sure Greta would have a problem with that as well. But could you probably call it like, what would you call it? Colonialism or something? If you.
Yeah.
For some targets, low targets on them, or try to tell them to have fewer babies, or to stop them, stop the spread of diseases by digging up the dead a few days later and dancing with them, or stop eating bush meat that spreads Ebola and things like that. It's not possible. Mm-hmm.
I will say briefly that this is not a question really of intelligence. We focus on that a little too often. This is a question of biospirit, instinct. If you don't have to be able to understand biospirit just yet, you can. If you're at the level of needing to call it instinct, then that's what you can call it. And it's at the level of instinct, meaning that there are going to be non-white peoples out there, individuals who have, you know, the right side of their bell curve, and when put into an environment where they are numerically diffident, they're going to imitate our ways, our customs, things like caring for the environment and animals. But in great enough numbers, their biospirit of their people, which is one that doesn't put as much value on the environment, it doesn't put as much value on animals, it doesn't even put as much value on each other, we don't see them creating multi-billion dollar organizations for the care of other races around the world, certainly not for the care of destitute, poor, suffering, starving white people. They don't do that ever, no matter how wealthy they are. So this is a question of the biospirit, and whether it is the outcome is good or bad depends on the perspective of the person. Is it a Westman who is assessing, or is it a non-white person who is assessing? A non-white person who is assessing would say, "That's fine to do this, to throw the trash. That's nothing wrong with that at all." A Westman is going to say, "No, that's absolutely reprehensible." So there is no cosmic yardstick by which we can say one is better than the other. But we can say, by our standards, certainly one is better than the other. And for their standards, same thing is true. It's just very different outcomes. I pass it back to Mark.
I agree. I think one thing that makes Europeans stand out, and one thing that really defines who we are as people, is the ability to defer pleasure and the ability to plan for seasonal changes and to plan for months or years down the line. And that is something that was exhibited in our ability to farm. And not just to farm in the sense of to sow seeds, to grow crops, and then harvest those crops, and then ration them through the cold season, but also our ability for things like crop rotation. Now, crop rotation would usually see us plant one vegetable for a year, plant a different vegetable for a second year, then leave the field fallow for grazing for a year or even 2 years. And in the years when the field was grazed, animals would be in the field, and obviously they would fertilize the field with their own manure. And that was something that took great planning and great foresight. Now, other cultures around the world haven't farmed like that. They haven't planned for the long run. And when you plan for the long run, you realize that polluting your lands is not long-term planning. You realize that you have to keep your land fertile. You have to follow a plan, and you have to be quite strict with how you deal with agriculture and things such as the disposal of waste. And countries that have never farmed like that, countries where the people aren't used to deferring pleasure, in a modern industrialized society where everything is materialistic, where everything comes in single-use plastic, where people are only thinking about the here and now, the consequences of that in a society where people are only interested in the here and now and aren't used to deferring pleasure or planning for the long term are obviously going to be disastrous. And again, you have a problem of forcing something upon people or upon large populations that those large populations aren't mentally capable of dealing with. Like giving a child a handgun, you wouldn't give a toddler a handgun because they can't deal with it. They don't understand the consequences of using it. And if you're giving this materialistic, capitalistic system to people who can't deal with it, to people who are impulsive, to people who aren't used to that level of development, they will be like a toddler with a handgun. And the consequences will be absolutely disastrous, not just for them, but for the ecosystem in which they live, and sometimes for the entire world. And before we move on to the next question, if you can hear some squawking or squeaking, that's my daughter. At some point yesterday, she learned that squeaking as loud as she could was hilarious. And she's been practicing her squeak to the best of her ability from about 5:20 this morning. And now at 8:09, she's still finding the squeak to be absolutely hilarious. She's very proud of her squeak, but if you can hear it, that is what it is. It isn't the alt-right rat. He's been retired. It is actually my daughter. She is very, very squeaky. People are saying cute, and people think this sounds rather hilarious. Please come and spend 24 hours listening to that squeak, and then the laughter will be on you, my friends. It is. Carol's got her birds, and I've got my six-month-old daughter. Both are very squeaky. So we'll move on to the next question. Stephen Ben Bob gave $5 and said, just a small donation from a fellow animal lover. Thank you very much. Serena JB gave £5. Thank you very much. And said, how do environmentalists justify open borders when it's obviously going to be harmful to our environment and won't help that of any other country? I get the impression they don't really care. I think the left are very, very mixed up. One thing, and so are the right, actually. So are the right. Some of these magatards, as I call them, are as bad as the left now. These magatards, they'd support anything Trump said, regardless of its merit, and they'd be against anything the left said, regardless of its merit, just because of who voiced the respective arguments. One thing that I'm really proud about being a nationalist is we look at every policy, regardless of who puts it forward, and we assess whether that policy is good for our people, and we take that policy on its merits. So I find it funny that Republicans hate the idea of healthcare. Healthcare in a high trust, high IQ society is a wonderful thing. Look at the NHS. I think that Republicans opposing that policy just because the Democrats support it is ridiculous. Now, I equally think that the left pick policies, and these environmentalists, many of them are leftists, they pick policies based on how they feel. So on one hand, they think cuddly animals, environment, good. Pollution, climate change, bad. And that is some good thinking. It's thinking, you know, that I agree with. Well, I don't believe in man-made climate change. I think pollution is bad and I want to look after animals. I want to look after the environment. But they also then look at migrants and say, migrants, poor, sad. We need to bring them here. We need to open our borders. Mafeels. And those two policies don't work together. So we have joined up thinking. We say, well, we love the environment. We love our people. We love living in, you know, complete and utter, what can I say, ecological harmony with the natural world. So we realize that to do that, lots of migrants equals bad and will damage the ecological equilibrium in our nations. But the left don't think like that. They adopt policies on the basis of, one, are those policies the opposite of what we want? Which is usually yes, because they want things that are bad for the West and we want things that are good for the West. And because we want things that are good for the West, they will by default pick things that are bad for the West. And I think when they look at policies, there's a lot of how do they feel? Do these policies hurt somebody's feelings? But you can't make policy on whether it hurts somebody's feelings or to be the nice guy. And because of that, so many of their policies don't fit. They can't make a cohesive manifesto. For example, they want the NHS. Well, the NHS works in a country with one group of people who all work, all pay in, who are high trust, high IQ. The NHS doesn't work when you have open borders. Environmentalism doesn't work when you have open borders. A benefit system doesn't work when you have open borders. So their policies aren't cohesive. They don't work well together. And that's why if you had, say, some kind of nationalism fused with some kind of socialism for the people in that nation, with closed borders and the people being high IQ, high trust people, it may well work. But any form of community socialist politics will never work with open borders. Carol, what's your opinion on that?
I totally agree. It's like two different equations. You can't mix them together, because if you put them together, it's just totally unbalanced. Like some people, like, for example, the same people who create antibiotics are the same people who decide not to have 10 children because they can't afford them. So that's like a balanced equation. Longer, better health, longer lives, lower child mortality, but not a huge explosion of population that we can't control. And then other groups of people are the opposite. Maybe they don't invent antibiotics, just as a random example, but do have many, many, many children without planning ahead in the future for them. So it's just different worlds with different equations that can't be mixed together, because once you start moving around the things from the different equations, it just all falls apart. It just can't be balanced in that way.
Any thoughts, Jason, before we move on?
I'll just briefly say that for most of the anti-whites, when they're supporting, and you look at this at these videos that Project Veritas has just released about these Bernie Sanders staffers, they support things that are clearly just intended to inflict harm on Western kind of Western civilization. They're just pretext. We call them the myths of pretext, moralization, intellectualization, sentimentalization of reasons to achieve anti-white objectives. Some anti-whites, or some people who are in the anti-white spheres, they are genuine lovers of animals, the environment, et cetera. And they are horrified increasingly by the outcomes that the anti-whites as a whole are pushing for. What Mark, both Mark and Dove were saying right now, which is that you can't have these policies. You can't have this acclaimed moral position and then have policies that obliterate your moral position. And certainly bringing these hordes in from other places in the world and taking them from third world status to first world status is not going to accomplish the objectives. And we can see here in the United States, and this would be a great opportunity to have Patrick here, because I'm sure he's traveled to many of these national parks as well. We can see the ramifications of that. These folks, even though they don't go out to these natural environments in the way and frequency and percentage that Western kind does, they are polluting the hell out of it. They are throwing, and I have had two occasions when I have addressed people who polluted right in front of me as well. So this is really what we see with these anti-whites. You're seeing just a pretext to conceal what their real objective is, which is to inflict harm. So I'll pass it to you, brother.
Okay, next question from David Marcus, who gave 10 British pounds. And he asked, what are your views on the coronavirus? Do you give any credence to these being deliberate? Is that the virus that's coming from China?
I don't know. I
don't really know much about it. So sorry, David. I don't think bacterial infections are deliberate. Now, I know this is a virus, which is different. And the reason I don't think bacterial infections or super bacteria or super bugs, as they're known, are deliberate is because I actually know somebody who suffered an infection from one of these super bugs because they were in a hospital where antibiotics had been overused, and eventually antibiotics lose their effectiveness because bacteria have such a short reproductive cycle that they evolve very quickly. And now you have bacteria they're not people, which are, they're not going to pop around for tea, which are now becoming resistant to antibiotics. So I do think there is a real problem with the overuse of antibiotics. And in certain Western nations, people go and ask for antibiotics for everything. They ask for them when they get a cold, when they get the flu. And obviously, both flu and the common cold are viruses. So antibiotics have no effect on people with viruses. Now, this, however, is a virus. So I don't know. I can only say this. I think governments around the world and private companies have numerous viruses and probably all manner of horrible, horrible diseases locked away in special facilities. Whether they've released them at any time, I don't know. I couldn't say. I wouldn't put it past governments to use something like a particularly nasty virus to thin out the population if they really had to, if it was in the interests of the global elite. But I don't think that is in their interests. I think the global elite all serve GDP. So it's all about endless economic growth. And endless economic growth comes from more economic units. And whether you like it or not, we are the economic units. And one thing that's always been said to me for a long time by your Alex Jones fans, people who are more conspiratorial. And when I say conspiratorial, I class a conspiracy as something that is put forward without evidence, an idea that's put forward without sufficient evidence. If you're putting forward evidence to back up your claims, it's not really a conspiracy theory because you have actual solid evidence to back it up. But some of these claims that the world superpowers are all about population reduction just seem like absolute nonsense to me. Because if these people are all powerful and their goal is population reduction, well, the world's population is booming at a massive rate and the African population is going to double in the next 30 years. Well, all I'll say is this. If the most powerful people who run the world want unfettered population reduction, they're either not that powerful or that's not what they really want. So it's one or the other, really, isn't it? So what do you guys think? Do you guys know anything about the coronavirus?
I don't know that much. Sorry, I'll just sit closer to the microphone here. I don't know that much about this. It's just my microphone is on top, so I'm just going to lean closer so you can hear me better. I don't know that much about this coronavirus, but just Mark, you were saying that in some Western nations, people ask for antibiotics for everything. I think it's much, much worse in other countries, like in Asia, maybe in Africa as well, where the antibiotics are just over the counter. There's not as much controls on them as there is in the Western world. So that's obviously something which is leading to more antibiotic resistance. And when it comes to the manufacturing of bacteria and viruses, I mean, I would presume that some places do have it as like a potential weapon, like just in case for their evil plans. But I don't think it's really necessary. Like the way things are going, it's really only a matter of time before another big superbug comes along and wipes out a huge amount of people. Because you couldn't try harder for it to happen than the way things are going now with the overuse of antibiotics, not only with people, but mostly with animals, and especially all over the world, really. But I think especially over in China, I've heard it's like much worse. Antibiotics are just given routinely to animals. And of course, the animals, the modern agriculture industry, all of the animals are really crowded in, really cramped, filthy spaces. It's just the absolute perfect breeding ground for bacteria and viruses to mutate into something really, really awful and spread between the animals and then eventually becoming a zoonosis, spreading to humans as well. So I think that's really only a matter of time, especially because the way we're just flying through the antibiotics, when you think about it, it was so different 100 years ago. We've already used up a number of them already. I think I remember a few years ago there was a gene that was found in bacteria that was resistant to like the final, like the last resort, the strongest antibiotic that it currently exists. And the scary thing about that was it was a gene. It wasn't a specific bacteria, but a gene that can like move between that different bacteria can use if they want. I'm not sure exactly how it works. I'm not a biologist. But it's just something that's very worrying, and really it's only a matter of time.
Yeah, the
Jason?
Yeah, just the real threat, of course, is the zoonotic transmission from these animals to humans, because you do have this rapid spread of disease, not only, of course, among human beings, but then animals. And of course, Dove will know very clearly that one of the species that it's easiest for that to take place, of course, was in birds, that they can be transmitted, transmogrified into a disease that we are able to catch. But yeah, when it comes to this virus over in China, I wouldn't think, I mean, I agree with Mark. It's really idiotic to believe that the anti-white elites want to reduce the world population by blowing it up to many, many, many millions of times what it has ever been on planet Earth. So that's absurd. But you are creating, as Dove says, this petri dish of an environment where diseases can easily be created. And governments, they don't create diseases out of thin air. They take diseases that are extant, and then they militarize them in a way that it is easier for them to deliver if they want to. So there's no way a human being is going to be able to create a disease as well as nature will be able to create a disease. We can just amplify it. So I think probably what's happening in China, and China's really the reaction here that I'm just looking at on the news, is because of this avian flu that they didn't respond to properly. My guess is that this is just a legitimate new virus, or well, it could be ancient virus, who knows, but they are handling it in a way that is more respectable in that they are quarantining the area. And finally, as Dove says, I will just underline the point, I think Mark might have mentioned it too, in China and India, they hand out antibiotics like there's no tomorrow. So for all of the complaints we have about antibiotic use in the West, it's nothing compared to what happens. You can go to a doctor in India and in China and say, my elbow hurts. And they're like, okay, well, here's this several prescriptions for several different types of antibiotics. And of course, the more that antibiotic, and if folks don't understand this, the more an antibiotic is in the population, the better chance viruses and bacteria are able to develop resistance to these antibiotics, which, thank God for the white man, we brought them to the population and have saved uncountable lives as a consequence. And we should, I look forward to the gratitude from the non-white population whenever they're ready to give it. And I pass it back to Mark Collette.
Some people a couple of people in the chat have mentioned the Georgia Guidestones. I would like to go into that at some time because I have an interesting take on that. When you actually read what's written on those stones, you could interpret many of those things to be broadly in alignment with what we actually think. I think there's probably one thing on those stones which I completely disagree with, but everything else seems quite reasonable. So I don't really understand why people get really hot under the collar over what's written on those stones. And I certainly don't think they're, you know, a declaration by the global elite that they're going to get rid of everyone. I think people have really got that, that all a little bit wrong. Anyway, historical revisionist gave $5 and said, which do you think is preferable or get the most done for our people? An atomized, deracinated 60% majority, or a highly organized and ethnocentric 30% minority? Well, that's a really complex question, and I don't actually have an answer for that, because what you're saying is the only time we will fight back, the only time we will come together and oppose our own replacement, is when we've already been replaced. And that's a very, very dangerous sort of way of making policy. That's a very, very dangerous thing to say, because it's a huge gamble, isn't it? You're saying that we can only win when we've already lost effectively. The only way we will ever fight back is by becoming a minority, seeing how terrible it is, and then doing something about it. But that hasn't actually happened, has it, in places like South Africa? So why would it happen in the West? But the treatment of our people will be so much worse when we're a minority. I think that we shouldn't really be asking that question at all, with all due respect. I think we should be working as hard as we can to solve the problem now, and keep working to solve the problem as we slide towards becoming a minority. We certainly shouldn't just sit and wait to become a minority, then decide to get organized. So in a way, the question is irrelevant, because we should be doing everything we can in our power to turn things around before we get to that point. And if we can't, well, those who are left, those who are the minority, must continue the fight. What are you guys thinking on that question?
I agree. It's too late to wait. What are the chances that it would work then in the end? There's always a chance, but that there'd be so much against you that it's better than nothing. Fighting back, even when you're an absolute minority, is still better than nothing. Like to save yourself or to reclaim your homeland. But it's wouldn't be a good plan, in my opinion.
So, Mark, the gist of the question was about the waiting until we are down to as the dregs of our societies, the collapse, and then that will be the motivator. We talked about this really on After Hours last night, folks. If you want to see my opinion on that, a longer discussion on that, you can watch that over on my channel, No White Guilt. But ultimately, it's about perception. And you can look at, just as Mark pointed out, in South Africa, and you can look numerous places throughout the West as smaller states even all the way down to counties. Even as things have gotten worse, there hasn't been a rallying idea. And this is what is important. Number one, it's because of perception. If people can be made to believe that, by way of their perception of the world, that everything is okay, they will allow things to deteriorate to the point where it is well beyond okay anymore. It's about perception. The second thing is, we have psychological warfare being waged against us. That is why things like nationalism won't work anymore. Religion won't work anymore. A typical political ideology won't work anymore. We need a psychological defense for a psychological war that is being waged against us as a people, as a global people, which means we need to defend ourselves on a global scale and recognize that we are a single people with many countries rather than many countries with many different peoples. I pass it back to Mark.
Yes. Next question. Croswiz. Oh, no, the Thin Red Line gave $10 and said, the 20s belong to nationalism. Thank you very much. Crosswiz gave £5. Thank you very much. And said, great to see Luna Lovegood is on our side. I think that's a suggestion that Carol looks like a Harry Potter character. I had to Google who Luna Lovegood was. I really hate Harry Potter. And I hated Harry Potter before it was cool to hate Harry Potter.
Yeah, I really don't know much about Harry Potter either, but of course, over the years, the last 10, maybe 15 years, people have always compared me to Luna Lovegood. I think I saw the first Harry Potter in the cinema, but I never was interested in all the rest of it, so I didn't even remember the characters. I don't know if Luna was even in the first one. I don't even really know what Luna is like, so apparently I'm like her.
Right. Eric Drave gave £10 and said, number one, serious question, is that your real voice, Dancing Dove?
No. It's a voice to put on. It's for fun. I'm actually a man.
Yeah, when she finishes the stream, when we finish the stream, she always says, oh, God. I'm so pleased I don't have to talk like that anymore.
How did you know? I just like zip off my woman suit and let my fat man body flap out.
Okay, and he also asked a serious question, or made a serious point. Mark, please check out the Welcome to Oldham articles if you haven't already. It's a shocking expose of more grooming. Now, I've already heard about this, so everyone Google this, Welcome to Oldham. there has been another grooming cover-up, and it's in Oldham. The council are trying to keep a lid on it at the moment. There's been several courageous nationalists who've been going to council meetings in Oldham and trying to force the council to talk about it. The council do stream their meetings live, but have started turning off the stream when these issues are discussed. These people are despicable anti-whites who are trying to cover up the abuse of our girls. Thank you for that. Very important super chat, Eric Drave. That was very important. Now, Jarvis Kruger Witz has given us three questions. So let's have a quick fire round. The first is for $3. And he says, I was wondering, what are your thoughts on Virginia gun rally? Several people have actually asked about this in the other questions, which we're going to get to soon. Have you ever checked out John Mark or Kurt Doolittle's proprietarianism? Let's not go there. I can already see No White Guilt biting down on his lip over this one. But what's the thoughts on the Virginia gun rally? Well, I spoke about this on Patrick Slattery's show on Monday. I still work with him with Patrick on Mondays, do a show with him that goes out on National Bugle Radio, which is hosted by, it's not the Wrench Radio Network, it's the Republic Broadcasting Network, that's one, RBN. And I don't suggest people go to these big rallies, or not that our people go to these big rallies. The last thing I want to see is another Charlottesville. Be careful, stay away, and stay away from anything that may well be one of these state honey traps that ends in violence and justifies our opponents taking even more of our rights away. What do you guys think, if you have any opinions on this rally?
Dove, do you have anything? Any thought?
I'm afraid not. I don't know enough about it to have an interesting opinion.
No worries. Yes, you're. I mean, others across the pond. Yeah, this is my home state of Virginia, and it was my people, my family. The blood of my family is in the soil, not just from natural deaths, but for fighting for the independence of the South. And so it's very meaningful to me. It's very hurtful to me that the anti-whites have so overpopulated the state with border crossers, with people from around the world who can be relied upon to vote anti-white policies, that they now control the government here. And Ralph, in charge of the government in Virginia, has made several declarations, caused a lot of normal folks in Virginia to become very upset, filled with angst about us being. And this is the thing. This is about our right to self-defense. I say it again and again. I do not call this a gun rally. It's a right to self-defense rally. Let the people, the conservatives and the like, continue to refer to this as a gun rally. And they're opposing the what do the anti-whites call it? Something about handgun control. That's it. And then so these people are opposing handgun control. I mean, how dumb do you have to be? This is about the right to self-defense. Now, it definitely looked like it had all of the trappings of Charlottesville. A couple of big differences were, of course, that even though there was a state of emergency, it only applied and therefore could not have a loaded firearm or a firearm on you whatsoever. It only applied to the square in which they were speaking. Outside of that, there were many thousands of people with effective weapons for defense and an effort. Now, it can be very complex, so I'm going to go into it here. But the bottom line is that if something looks like it's going to be another Charlottesville, certainly something that is smaller in size like a Charlottesville, you are going to be on the safer side to stay away from such events. We are thanking the good Lord that nothing happened down in Richmond the other day, and I will pass it over to Mark.
Thank you. Jarvis Kruger, second question for $3 was a question for everyone. Is there any white pills you can name, especially in the Anglosphere, like the UK, America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand? Well, I'd just say patriotic alternative. We are organizing. The thing is, one thing you've got to remember and really, really focus on this and take it to heart. Don't be waiting for a savior to come and rescue you. Don't be waiting for some knight in shining armor on a big white steed to ride into your town and city rally the people around him and lead you to victory. That isn't how it works. You have to do it yourselves. You have to get involved. You have to organize locally. You have to create your own white pills. When I set up Patriotic Alternative, many, many people had been asking me for many, many months when I was going to do something, when I was going to start holding events, when I was going to start organizing. And I did it. I said, right, we'll do it then. If people want me to do it, I'll give it a go. And so far, we've had success. But we've had success not because some magical, godlike, sort of uber human came in on a big white steed to rescue us. We've had success because we stood up, we worked together, and we decided to do something. It's called community action. It's what our people used to do. If you want white pills, go and create them. Go and make changes. And I'll give you an example. The other week I did a video, and it wasn't a very well-received video. It was a video on how television and screen time is damaging children's brains by delaying white matter. Well, not just delaying, but damaging and preventing white matter development in children's brains. Now, it's only been seen by about 11,000 people, which for a channel of my size is very small. I should imagine a mixture of shadow banning and the fact that it wasn't one of my usual videos. It wasn't on a topic I usually cover. Probably damaged viewership numbers. But I've had a few people, quite a few in fact, written to me and said, thank you so much for making that video. It had a real effect on me, and we've taken the TV away from the kids. We're not giving the kids the tablets anymore. Our children are now have a TV-free living room. And you know what? That might not be world-changing. It might not be the big change everyone's looking for. But by helping people to make little changes that make small improvements and bring us together as a community, those things are all white pills. And we aren't going to win. We aren't going to achieve success through one giant white pill, through this savior individual. We'll achieve success through many, many, many little white pills, many little victories, many people deciding to withdraw the TV from the kids, many people deciding that they're going to homeschool, many people deciding to hold a barbecue for fellow pro-white activists, many people deciding to get together and have a little event before Christmas or Easter where our people and their families can come together and build a community. They're the white pills we're looking for, not that big knockout blow. If you're waiting for that savior character or that one defining moment and you're just sitting and praying for it, you're going to be disappointed. You have to make your own victories. And those little victories are happening every day. You just have to look for them. Does anyone want to add anything to that?
I'll just say I totally agree. I'm just going to sit closer to the microphone again. It's because this microphone isn't working, so my microphone, I'm using my microphone on my computer, and of course I'm just trying to get closer so that you don't hear the birds so much. Mm-hmm. I totally agree. It's all about the small changes. And when you have small changes bit by bit and you get a good feeling from them, you kind of transmit that good feeling to other people. And then, you know the way when you like something, you're more likely to do it again, or you're more likely to do more things related with it, instead of when something's difficult to do, you're kind of more likely to stop doing it and then eventually just give it up because it's just, you've built up all these negative feelings about it. It's the small positive things that really do create a chain reaction and spread out to more and more people. So I wanted to say, I just totally agree, bit by bit.
Absolutely. There's such a gleaming white pill, positive thing. And it is indeed a patriotic alternative in the work that's being done over there. Folks, we need to stop looking over the heads of our heroes that we have in front of us today. People like Way of the World, people like Mr. George, people like Fred in the chat. People like Syrup with us today, always moderating. And of course, without question, great Mark Collette and the work that he's doing. Stop looking over the heads of these people for heroes so that you can look into the past, so that you can look for more black and white footage, so that you can find a quote from somebody who is now ashes in a box in the ground. There are living, breathing heroes today, and let's support those individuals. I pass it back, Mark.
Okay, Brynolf Malden has asked, gave £20, very generous, thank you very much. Said, what is the best way to red pill family and friends without putting them off? I did a big talk about this before. And what I'll say, when you start to talk about our policies and our beliefs to new people, always start with simple topics that they'll understand that will resonate with them about something they care about. Never go in with the JQ, never go in with some like conspiracy theory, never go in with like the final boss, always go in with something simple, something that's a starter topic. So if you're talking to someone who loves hedgehogs, talk about immigration and the way immigration is causing the housing boom, which is killing plenty of hedgehogs. If you're talking to someone whose mum couldn't get a space in the hospital for her hip replacement, talk about health tourism. If you're talking to somebody whose child has just gone to school and the class size is too big, talk about growing population and demographic change. Talk about things people can see that they can understand. When we went out and did the We Were Never Asked survey and we spoke to normal people, we found that 2/3 of people are concerned about immigration. They're concerned about demographics because they can see it. Keep it simple. Keep it to points people understand and make sure those points relate to their life so that they have an emotional attachment to what you're talking about. People are not moved by facts and figures alone. They are moved by emotional arguments and how those facts and the figures affect them on a daily basis. And if you do get onto deeper topics, a great way to win people over is hypocrisy. People hate hypocrites. So when you say, look, here's Sadiq Khan talking about an event which is only open to black women, normal people are appalled because they say, isn't that racist? And then you can say, yes, it is. But racism in Britain is something that primarily affects the indigenous people. Look at, you know, the 19,000 girls who were victims of racist grooming gangs last year alone. Turn these arguments around and move our people, move their hearts. And I know people say, and it's a real Ben Shapiro, you know, my facts don't care about your feelings. But facts never moved people to change things. Feelings move people to change things. And I speak to nationalists all the time who parrot this, my facts don't care about your feelings, Ben Shapiro talk. And that sounds good as a soundbite. But then if you say to any nationalist, why are you fighting for your people? They turn around and go, because I love my people. Well, then you're fighting because you're emotionally moved into fighting for your people. You are part of this struggle because something pulled on your heartstrings. And that something is the love for your people. Reconnect people with the love for their fellow European folk. And do that by pointing out hypocrisies and how big issues and some of these facts affect the day-to-day lives of the person you're talking to and the people they care about. What's the advice from you guys?
I also agree, but take it like gently, bit by bit, with things that affect their own lives. Like, for example, a lot of people in Ireland are having trouble with really high rent. It's like forcing a lot of people out of Dublin that have to go on really long commutes. In some ways, it's actually had a kind of a positive effect on some people, because some people I know have had to move out of Dublin, moved to a more countryside area, thought they were going to hate it, and ended up really liking it. And originally, they just were forced out because of the prices and the rent. So there is that small good aspect. But in general, a lot of people are complaining about it. And then, you know, relate that to the constant inward migration, the huge increase in the population of foreigners in Ireland. One little problem is, though, a lot of people seem to have these like phrases that they've heard from the media that they just kind of use as an argument, like, oh, yeah, it's ridiculous to blame migrants for all our problems or something like that. Like, they just come out with it and say it because they've heard it so many times. So that's, and they I've found that they kind of try to shut you down that way when you're trying to like reason with the issue. But then I would just, what I do in those situations is just try to be calm and gentle and just say, well, why? But can, you know, just try to tease them out, ask them questions and just try to help them come to a conclusion by themselves through questions, or just asking them how they think things are going to, how things are going to turn out in like bit by bit over the next few years. One of the things, one really annoying conversation I had recently, not too long ago actually, was I was saying, oh, it's, I was talking about the homeless problem in Ireland and the huge amount of people in direct provision, which is people in asylum seeker care in Ireland, where they get food and board. And it's a big problem because a lot of them are rejected asylum in Ireland, but they still stay there and they never get deported anyway. And so I was talking about that with someone, and they said to me, but we won't survive as a country. We won't survive if we don't keep letting people in. Like that's, you know, because that's what they say on the media, and Macron and Merkel are always saying, Europe won't survive if we don't allow millions of Africans in. And it's just, once you kind of break down that bit, when they're just repeating something because they've heard it again and again, just try to get them to reason it out. I think that's a good way, at least a start, to help people.
No, I love that point. That's such a funny point. We won't survive unless we allow all these people to come in, replace us, and breed us out. It's like, what? We won't survive unless we let these people kill us. What? Oh man. So Jason, do you have any points on this one before we move? We've got a couple of last minute super chats.
I just support what you just said, and that is what this response of people agreeing to that we won't survive if we're not replaced. This is what I refer to as Tertullian's glitch. It's credo qui absurdum. I believe because it is absurd. And it's a regrettable malfunction, and we have to address it. But I underscore everything you said, Mark, and as well as Dove, and I hand it back.
I usually have these analogies, and I can't even think of an analogy that would fit such a stupid point. I can't even think of a way to rationalize what these people are saying, because it's so insane that my mind actually can't comprehend it. And I've heard this argument before, and it does drip into people's heads. I've spoken to people who have said, well, we won't exist soon if we don't let these people come in. You know, if we don't let these people swamp into our lands, how will Britain still be there? Well, what? You know, it's the people who make the country. The country, this patch of land, is only wonderful. It's only an expression of culture and tradition because of the people. It's the people. But what can you do? But as I said, when you go out and speak to the public, 66% of them do not want this demographic change.
I just thought of something similar. To say that the evolved form of abundance is scarcity. So that is just as asinine as saying we can only survive if we bring in these people to replace us. But I pass it back.
We have two last super chats. William Runner gave $10 and said, thank you for standing up for white well-being. Thank you very much. And Novi Honza gave $10 and said, thank you, Mark. Just a tiny donation for Patriotic Alternative for my white kin in England. Salute to Dove, Jason, and you, brothers and sisters. Thank you very much, my friend. Now, we do have one question that I'm going to answer, or a couple of quick fire questions. I'm just going to answer these. Adam asked, on entropy. Thoughts on Lawrence Fox, just common sense, or is he our guy? I don't think he's our guy. I think he's somebody who managed to mouth a few comments that go against the extreme left narrative. And because of that, people are holding him up. And he's somebody that we should be wary of. Now, I don't want to pour water on the bonfire of happiness that some celebrity said something we like. But be very careful of these people. Because every now and again, somebody comes forward from the celebrity sphere and says something that's roughly in line with what we're saying. And then people, rather than saying, wow, it's good that he said that, they start looking at this person, as Adam's asked, as if they're our guy, as if they're going to be our savior character, as if in 4 months' time, they're going to be marching through the streets of Britain with an army of normal English folk taking back Parliament. That's not going to happen. And we have to think of it like this. When these people take some of our talking points, we have to capitalize on it. But we should never run after them as if they're our savior. If they're serious, they'll come to us and get on board with us. Because when we run after them, that's dangerous. And 9.9% recurring, these people end up to be Pied Pipers. And as we run after them, they lead us off the edge of a cliff into disappointment. And you might have somebody like Lawrence Fox saying things that are roughly in line with what we think today. But in 4 weeks' time, when he's at some multicultural centre or endorsing some degenerate fad or social policy, then you'll be disappointed. So as I said, when these people say things that really are our policies, we should compliment them for doing so and point out vigorously that they are our policies, but we should never take them into our bosoms straight away and hold them up as the new great white hope. That only leads to disappointment. And Adam also asked, will PA's 20-point plan also include slash cover normie policies like health, economic and transport policy? Of course. And that's about all we have got time for. And oh, somebody asked, will I be seen on D Live? Well, I thought about coming on D Live and doing sort of streams like this, but I also thought about coming on D Live and doing a different sort of stream. People sort of play games on there, do a little bit of streaming of sort of retro games. And maybe I could do some comfy streams one night where I streamed myself doing amazing feats on the Super Nintendo, which would be unimaginable to mortal folk. Mm-hmm. And just have a chill out with you guys. I don't know. Would people like something more chilled out on D Live? Maybe me streaming some stuff that I'm interested in that's not exactly political, but we could talk about politics at the same time. People like the idea of that? Maybe so. But that brings us to the end of the stream. And first and foremost, I would like to thank Carol for being here. Carol, it is always an absolute pleasure. You've been an amazing guest. I absolutely love your demeanor. And this has been sort of the epitome of what I like to call a comfy stream. It's been really nice. It's been really relaxed. You brought a wonderful laid-back atmosphere with you, and I hope you come back on in the future. Please tell our viewers how we can find you, how we can donate to your work, and leave any sort of closing remarks you wish.
Yeah, thank you. Again, I'm just going a little closer to the microphone. I know it's a bit weird, but it's just easier. Thank you so much for having me on. It's really nice to be back. It's been good fun to chat about all of these things. I should have mentioned at the beginning, I know I said to you guys, but I didn't say it to the general public, that like we were talking about climate change and Greta and stuff like that. And I didn't do this on purpose, the hat and everything. I'm wearing the hat because the weather is really bad. It's cold and I don't have any central heating. Actually, Greta would be probably pretty happy about that. Low carbon footprint. No, in general, I just prefer to wear a couple of extra layers, drink some warm soup, because central heating actually makes me feel really uncomfortable. I really hate the feeling. So just to pop on a hat is my favorite thing to do. And Oh yeah, and the braids were just because I just wash my hair. When I wash my hair in the evening, I put it in braids so that it's like wavy the next day. So it wasn't to make fun of Greta. It wasn't a planned thing. It just kind of happened. But anyway, if you don't know my channel, I'm Dancing Dove on YouTube. As I've said before, not been very active the last year, just over a year or so, but we'll be getting back into it really soon. You can find me on Twitter at The Dancing Dove, and that's about it. And thanks again so much for having me on.
Well, thank you for being here. It's been a wonderful show. Jason, tell us who's on tap, where we can find you, and how we can support your excellent work.
Thank you so much, good brother. It is magnificent to always be here with all of you who attend this magnificent show. And it is an honor to be with Mark, as always. And, of course, a deep honor to be with the wonderful Dancing Dove. I thank you for your service to White Wellbeing, and I excitedly look forward to the new videos you will be making, the reading of the stories, and the news that you'll be covering. So look forward to that, everyone, as well. Please do follow Dancing Dove. Let's make her channel subscription count go through the roof today, everyone. Thursday night, who's going to be on tap? Well, it's going to be Daughter of Albion. And the last time we had her on, we had a technical glitch, and Jared and I worked frantically in the background trying to help her get back into the show, but it was not to be. It was something that was on the lines, and now she is going to be at a different computer. We will have no issues this time. Thursday night, make sure you're over on No White Guilt or Guardian with NWG or any of the numerous platforms that we will be broadcasting to watch that program. It's going to be very insightful, talking about her process of going free, coming from where she was to a new place, a new pinnacle, and service to all that is good and noble and heroic in the world. Thank you all for being a part of this magnificent period in history when we will be on those history books that our descendants will read in the future. Heroes of an age that they can only imagine how romantic and magnificent it must have been to be a part of. Mark Collette, I pass it back to you, good sir.
Okay, last thoughts for today. Firstly, Unwashed is doing a debate over on his channel right now. So if you want to pop over to Unwashed's channel to watch him debate, I think he's actually debating a leftist. He sent me a text today saying, "Hey, Mark, tonight at 9 p.m., I'm debating someone called Fascists Beware after PWR on my channel. Feel like shouting it out? It should be a laugh." Well, feel free to go and support him with that debate right now. I would just like, I don't really have many other things to really close the show with, other than to remind people that the Patriotic Alternative email went out today. So check your spam folder if you've signed up. It should be waiting for you. And there is some important information about what we're hoping to do later this year. Now, I would also like to say, if you haven't donated and want to make a donation, you can make a donation via writing to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com, and I can give you a way to make a donation, or you can donate to me via Bitcoin. And if you are watching this on replay, you can now donate when I'm offline via Entropy 2. All donations are greatly received. Next week, we have Brandy Sheets on. She'll be discussing the issues in South Africa. So that's going to be a very informative show. She's a very important woman who is leading the crusade against white genocide in South Africa. So that just leaves me to say thank you to everybody. Oh, and one last thing. Remember, the Brexit stream, not this Friday, but next Friday, that will feature Morgoth, Laura Towler, and hopefully one other. So keep your eyes peeled for that. And that just leaves me to say thank you to everyone. Thank you to the lovely Carol, aka Dancing Dove. She has come here looking like basically a much, much better Greta Thunberg. She's sort of in Greta Thunberg fancy dress, but has pulled it off looking fabulous. That's very good. Thank you to No White Guilt, our wonderful commander-in-chief, who is always there as my right-hand man, who never lets us down, never misses a show. Thank you to everyone who donated so generously. We've had one final donation from Great Lakes Nationalist, $15, and he said, "Great show, thanks all." Thank you, my friend. And finally, I would like to thank all the people who have donated. It was very generous, very kind of you all. White Healings just sent a $10 donation. Thank you very much. And finally, as always, I would love to thank everyone who's been here. This community is absolutely wonderful. I love you all. I look forward to seeing you same time next week for another episode of PWR. And my video will be out on Friday at the usual time, and it will be on the Meghan Markle debacle. So look forward to that one. And I will see you same time next week. Thank you and good night.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.